There's a time that I remember when I never felt so lost, and I felt all of the hatred was too powerful to stop. Now my heart feels like an ember, and it's lighting up the dark. I'll carry these torches for you, and you know I'll never drop. Yeah, everybody hurts sometimes, everybody hurts someday, yeah, yeah. But everything gon' be alright.
The Cure with Amy Cabo. Life can bring many difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. Welcome, Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabo, joined by Boris in everything we do, just like always. Our show is available live on the radio through our app called The Cure on our website, GodIsTheCure.com. And we are broadcasting live from Miami. Also on Facebook, search for God is the Cure. And please click on send message button and you can send us a question or a comment. We would love to hear from you. This show deals with suffering and the tenacity of the human spirit, the will to survive, and the courage to keep moving forward, despite any obstacle, with the help of God and each other. We do provide testimonials to let people know that they are not alone. And in this show, the testimony started with me, having been a survivor from child abuse well into young adulthood. We also have professionals in the medical field and inspirational speakers that are willing to help and give valuable information, because I do believe education is key, transparency is needed, and I believe we can help each other. For me, my healing came from God, but other forms of healing are presented as well to service everyone. And as I know, life can be very challenging, but always know that we are not alone. I do remember a time I never felt so lost, but the anger and the hatred felt too heavy. And even though we all hurt sometimes, our hearts can feel like an ember lighting up the dark. It has to start with us, and God will always be around to make everything all right. Today we will be discussing the debilitating effects of depression, and our special guest is Patricia Farrell. Dr. Farrell is a published author and a nationally known licensed psychologist expert for WebMD, with experience in most areas of mental health for over 30 years. She has consulted with communication firms, is a member of the American Psychological Association, and a biography in Who's Who in the World. She has also been a disability consultant, was a board member of the New Jersey Board of Psychological Examiners, board member of Bergen Pines Hospital, and a psychiatry preceptor for the Medical School of New Jersey. Dr. Farrell, thank you for being on the show. We are now live on The Cure.
It's delightful to be with you again today, Amy. Very nice.
Thank you.
How are you today?
Very good. I hope you're well. Dr. Farrell, no matter what mental conditions we may have, the most prominent and problematic symptom seems to be depression. Presently, 18% of the population suffers from depression, and that's 14 million people. So what do you suppose is causing such a high tendency among us? Is it our environment, our beliefs, our genetic makeup, and how much of a role do our genes play?
Well, you know, depression is, and we have to stress this because some people really get the wrong impression. First of all, every emotion that you feel is in the spectrum of normal emotions. So every once in a while, all of us, myself included, are going to get depressed because of things that are happening to us or in our lives or some way. The other thing that we have to consider is, when does depression go or get to the point that it stops us in our tracks, as it were, and causes us not to be able to participate in life or to enjoy our life and to look forward to the future? And certainly contributing to that is a number of things. Among them, it's very interesting, some information just came out recently about the environment. And, you know, I always say that depression is actually one of what I call the ugly twins. The ugly twins come together, and they are depression and anxiety. Now, we know from the new research that anxiety is actually being caused by things in our environment. Now, I don't mean just in the political environment or the relationship environment, but the environment out there among the trees and where we walk on the sidewalks. All of the pollutants that we are ingesting are causing our body to react in ways that are abnormal. One of the things that it causes abnormality is you have problems breathing. Now, we know that for anxiety, one of the symptoms that we see in people who have anxiety or high levels of stress that can be caused by a number of things too, is that they feel like they can't breathe. They can't, or they're breathing very hard. They're trying to catch their breath. They're feeling overstimulated in some way. They can feel their heart pumping harder. And sometimes that's caused by the environment, the physical environment that you're in. So you have to think about that too. But depression in its extreme form, and we do see that from, of course, from a number of different things.
Well, if I can just stop you for a minute, when you were talking about the physical environment, that it can cause that, could it be the opposite effect as well? Because when I don't feel well, I go for a ride with my top down, look at the beautiful nature, and it really makes me feel better.
Absolutely.
Just checking.
Yes, you're right. The environment can be stimulating and can really raise our spirits. And we talk about forest bathing, which just means walking for a walk where there's any trees or flowers or grass or whatever, and that really does raise our mood. So, yeah, it can go either way.
And avoid polluted areas.
Yeah, and we have to also look at, you know, a lot of people talk about, well, I'm under a tremendous amount of stress, and oh, my God, I've got to get rid of this stress, and it's just so stressful. Well, let me tell you, stress, like everything else, has two components. One is that it can cause you to absolutely begin to fall apart and to start getting medical illness because it throws your body for a loop, and it's the stress hormone, cortisol, which is injurious to your immune system and can lead you to develop all kinds of medical illnesses. The other thing is that there is a certain level of stress that is actually motivating. And you have to say, well, I've got to get this job finished, but I'm not going to go crazy over it. Yeah, I'm going to get it finished, and I will do my best, and I've got to begin to start thinking that way. So it's a matter of thinking of the stress and how you can control it. And all of us pretty much have a level of control. There are some things we can't control over. Climate change, we can't control it. Whether it's going to rain today, we can't control it. But we can control how we feel about it.
Well, also, it works out better if we do our best, I've noticed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do our best. And then we have to say, you know, like engineers have been saying all along when they're developing very complex circuits and computer programs and things, look, this is good enough. This is all I can do. Now I will be satisfied. I've done it. I've tried. Okay, I'm going to be good to myself now and take a break.
I say, what else can I do?
Yeah, exactly. There are things you can. The sun will come up tomorrow. Let's believe in that. I think that's going to happen.
But
and
hey,
that's something to look forward to.
How about when how about when they say you're born that way? It's in your genes. Your mother suffered it. Your grandmother suffered it. Then how much of a barrier is that? Can we easily compensate?
Yeah.
We're not determined by our genes.
There is a certain level of genetic component. There are people who carry a gene that will make them more readily be depressed or anxious. Yes, that's a part. But, you know, it's like everything else. It doesn't have to come out. In other words, these are almost like seeds that have been put in the ground.
So now, just because you have the predisposition, you don't have to act on it.
Right. You have to look at your environment. If you were raised in a loving environment, in an environment where somebody showed you how to handle different kinds of things, how to be competent, rather than saying, oh, you're so stupid, you can't do that, what's the matter with you? Why would you want to do that in the first place? You know, discouraging. How are you going to begin to feel about yourself? You're going to feel lack of self-esteem, lack of motivation. All you want to do is sleep and escape. And in the worst-case scenario, you're going to think about ending it all. And that's terrible. And that is really something that concerns all of us. Just remember, there's almost everything that is going to have something where you have input and you can begin to help yourself.
Right.
And to change the things that are happening to you. You're not going to be a miracle worker, but
no.
You are going to be your own best coach. You will begin to coach yourself and to begin. You know, I always say to people, self-talk is really underrated.
Right.
And I would say do it.
Thank you, Doctor. I'm Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. We will continue talking to Dr. Farrell after this short break. Please stay with us.
We will be right back with Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Life can bring many difficult situations. Domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. The issue is not stay there, but to overcome all obstacles and show that with the love of God, your husband, and your family, you can succeed. Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals Amy Cabo's life. A warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on GodIsTheCure.com or buying her book on Amazon.com.
We will continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Welcome back to the show. For those that are just tuning in, I'm Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. We're talking to Dr. Farrell about depression. We are live on your radio and also on Facebook. Later, the show will be available on podcast. Search for The Cure on iTunes or any podcast channel. I have been there, felt alone, forgotten. I've been tested. But it's possible to build a house from pieces, and I realize now that I needed those building stones. Dr. Farrell, sometimes we suffer from depression, but I've noticed and I've realized in my life that a lot of my suffering was self-sabotage. I created my own suffering, and these days I find ways to set myself up for feeling better. And I've learned to do it the other way around. But something that a lot of people struggle with that could be situational is job stress.
Very true. Very true.
Oh, by the way, there is a question. Hi, doctor. From the audience. Shailish here from the live Podbean stream has a question, how to deal with the job stress. Kind of.
Job
I guess,
stress.
Do you work, right?
Not so easy, let me tell you.
Okay.
Not so easy. I mean, all of us have to decide two things. Which is more important, me or the job? And if it's the job that's very important, then I have to learn to accommodate myself in some way that will not be injurious to me. In other words, I think one of the biggest problems on a job, anywhere, doesn't matter where it is communication. How do you communicate with the person? How do they communicate with you?
And how do you say it?
Set up, yeah. You have to set up a different way of learning how to talk to people. Now, this sounds like, oh, please, don't give me that pie-in-the-sky idea. No, it's very simple. One of the things you have to do, and I would recommend this to anybody, is when they ask you to do something or they tell you, well, this is what it is, what it is, what it is, and you say, help, very simply, okay, help me to understand exactly what you would like. I would appreciate your help with that. If they see that you are seeing them in some way as willing to be helpful and willing to be, and I use this carefully, in some way superior to you. Now, they're not really superior. You just have to go along with this. It's a scenario. This is the way you have to learn to live. So you say, okay, I've done this in therapy all my life when I've had someone come in. And therapy is always communication. And
yes.
People will come in and they will say something.
It's,
I don't
the
care
most important
if they
thing.
Are. You know,
you, I never forgot that you said
psychotic.
That. I never forgot that you said that. And you'd be surprised. I've used it. And even with people who have completely opposite views, we could have a great conversation just by starting out, help me understand your views. Help me understand
Absolutely.
Where you're coming from.
Right.
We may
simple.
Be thinking the same thing. You never know.
Yeah, I always say, we can't be that bright that we understand everything. And I always say, please, just make believe I'm a five-year-old. And then explain it to me as simply as possible in the simplest terms. I don't need complicated language. I just need a very simple explanation, and we can go from there. And this is what you're looking for. And one of the things you don't ever want to use, one word you don't want to use, is why. If you say to somebody why, you are immediately setting yourself up for a confrontation, because their back hairs are going to get up. You are now throwing down the gauntlet. You are saying, okay, this is war. No, you say, please, let me understand. Help me to understand what you want me to do.
Right, so
begin
what
it,
instead of why?
You know, don't
what?
Say why. Don't
say, what?
Say no. Say, okay, I'll try. But tell me how you think I should be doing it. I would appreciate your help. I know that you probably have a good idea of this, and maybe it hasn't occurred to me, so I would appreciate your input. Make
what a great open
good.
Mind. I love it.
Right?
I'm
yeah,
even feeling good about that.
Well, good, yeah. When someone feels good, they treat you better. Believe me. It can
Setting
work.
Setting yourself for being feeling nice, being happy, rather than setting
right.
yourself up for feeling bad. And it just, it's as simple as our actions.
Yeah, asking. You know, asking for help. There's nothing wrong with asking for help. It's one of the best things that you could do. Don't assume that you understand totally or that you can do what they need, because you may not know what they need or what they want or how they want it done. So make them clarify it and do it in a pleasant way. I know sometimes it's hard. Take a couple of deep breaths and allow yourself to calm down. Don't get upset. That's not going to help you. Be as calm as you can and just proceed with a nice conversation that will be helpful. That's it. I mean, we understand. I had to go to a major hospital the other day with someone that needed to get something. And we had to talk to one of the individuals who worked there and has worked there a long time and has a very specific job that she's been doing for 20 years. And all they require is that she's a technician. She just does this very specific job. The hospital has decided that they are going to cut back on their personnel. And what they are then going to have to do is everybody there is going to do other jobs that they've never done before, that they may not be terribly qualified for. We don't know. They've probably got some training. But it has stressed everybody. No one knows when they go in the morning what job they're going to. They don't have a supervisor because that job right now is not filled. This lady is under tremendous stress, and she is struggling because there's nobody for her to talk to about this. The order just comes down. Do it, and do it here, someplace you've never done before, something you've never really been doing much of before. And tomorrow, you don't know where you're going to be.
And figure it out.
You know,
figure it out.
But she has to
teach
earn
yourself
a living. So, yeah.
Wow. I mean, and yeah, they're stressed, but you could tell somebody you're stressed, try to relax. What is it that somebody can do if they are letting work take over their life and making them stressed? I know that they can think of better priorities and stuff, but sometimes they're just so focused on being stressed about their work. So what kind of things could help?
A very simple thing, and I have a video on my website, drfarrell.net, relaxation breathing. I can tell you that this is one of the simplest, quickest, easiest way to help yourself to learn to lower your stress. Very simple breathing exercise. It'll take you 1 or 2 minutes. You can do it where you happen to be sitting. You can go into the lavatory or whatever. You can go to the water fountain, and you can do it on the way.
Nice.
Five simple, you know, inhale and exhale.
We've been talking with Dr. Farrell about overcoming depression. Please call in if you have been struggling with depression or know of someone that you'd like to help. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884.
Cabo and the Cure.
I'll be right there, but you'll have to grab my throat and lift me in the air. If you need anyone, I'll stop my plans, but you'll have to tie me down and then break both my hands.
And now we will continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure.
We're back, and thanks for joining us. I'm Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. We are live every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern on your radio and our app, The Cure. Live on Facebook, search for God is The Cure, and send us a question or message by clicking Send Message. We'd love to hear from you. I feel like God will always be there if I need anyone, but we have to make it happen, earn it, deserve it, at least try. We are continuing our conversation with Dr. Farrell about fighting depression. Dr. Farrell, when it comes to depression, most of us will recognize someone that is depressed. What's the best to approach the situation?
One of the things that, as a professional, when we are concerned that if we ask someone, now usually if you ask somebody, are you depressed, generally they'll say, no, I'm fine. It may be in a very angry way. And of course, sometimes depression does express itself in anger, you know, in just a lack of an ability to tolerate anything. But the other thing that we look for also, and this is kind of, anybody can use this, it's a little kind of an inside look at what do? We say to someone, has your clothing felt any looser on it now, or is it any tighter on you now? What we're really asking is, do you have a change in your appetite? Because many times, when somebody becomes depressed, they will either go one of two ways. They will lose their appetite entirely. They will stop eating normally. They might just eat a little bit, or they might just kind of drink water and maybe have a little fruit or something. Or they will go on the other side. They will begin to eat lots of junk food. They will eat a lot of carbohydrates. Now, I have to tell you, unfortunately, carbohydrates have a chemical in them which actually can fight depression. And I once knew a nurse in a hospital who kept an enormous file cabinet, and the drawers in the file cabinet were filled with snacks that were very high in carbohydrates. And one of the things that she did was she medicated by eating pretzels and potato chips and Twinkies and all of these things, and that was kind of a way that she raised her mood a little. So we look at that.
I'm trying to cut down on Jordan almonds.
Jordan almonds? Oh, I love them.
My
if you watch the
snack,
television
good
show,
food.
I don't know if anybody watches the television show, The Closer, who it's Kira Sedgwick. She's absolutely marvelous. She's a major police officer or whatever. She's a commander or something like that. But her one kind of thing that she can't help herself is she constantly eats ringdings, and she keeps a drawer full of them, and she loves chocolates. Now, we know that dark chocolate also helps with depression. It raises your mood. It has something in it to raise your mood. So she uses a lot of dark chocolate. She obviously has a very stressful job. But we look at the foods that they're eating, the amount they're eating. We look at how are they sleeping. Are they sleeping a lot? Because people who sleep a lot actually are engaged in a behavior that is an escape behavior. They're trying to escape into sleep away from what's depressing them in their lives.
I know
or
that one.
They will not be able to sleep. They will have terrible insomnia. Now, that's very bad, because if you don't sleep, your physical health is going to be affected by it. So we look at those things. We look at the fact that can they concentrate on something? I used to work at making disability determinations. And one of the golden rules was, all in caps, PPE. Can they maintain persistence, pace, and stay on a task without too much supervision? So if you could do a task and regularly maintain a task, okay. A depressed person cannot do that because they can't concentrate. Their mind is just working constantly on their depression. They may also have feelings of guilt and worthlessness. And this is a very big concern of ours, because when they feel this terrible guilt and you hear somebody say, oh, I'm going to give up. I don't care. It's not worth it. I don't want to go on with this anymore. You have to take that very seriously.
Yes.
If a psychologist would, someone said that to a psychologist, you would have to immediately begin to do an evaluation whether or not they were in danger of hurting themselves or somebody else. And then you might have to make an intervention of sorts. So
and
you
what do you suppose are
that.
The barriers that exist to diagnose and to treat major depression disorder?
Primarily, if somebody's got major depression, and a lot of women will get a major depression after they have a baby. Postpartum depression is something that hasn't been recognized for years, and that's really a shame because it's a terrible thing to go through. But major depression generally has to be treated with medication. And if you were not an MD, you would have to refer that person to usually a psychiatrist, even though I have to tell you that probably 60 to 70% of the antidepressant and anti-anxiety medications are now provided by either gynecologists or family practitioners. People don't generally want to go to a psychiatrist because they don't want to bear that stigma. If you go to a psychiatrist, it means that they'll think, oh yeah, I'm crazy. No. It just means that you need some specialized help and you may need some medication. After the medication begins to work, and also during that period of time, you would work with somebody who would be able to help you in terms of the depression by using some what we call cognitive behavioral therapy. In other words, what are the things you can do in your life that will begin to make you feel better? And I'll tell you, one of the things that we recommend, or two of the things we recommend generally right now, probably more than ever before, is exercise. And I just read a very interesting article the other day. When you exercise, people think, oh, I have to go to the gym and I have to begin to, you know, sweat and work out, go on one of these bicycles that they do in the gym. And no, you don't have to do that. Actually, any small amount of exercise you do is going to help you. Think about it. If you do any kind of exercise, it's something more than you did before. You're now on your way. So do any exercise. Do it during the day whenever you feel like it. You want to pick up keep a dumbbell around the house, a 2-pound or a 1-pound dumbbell or something. Pick it up, lift it up a couple of times. You don't have to lift it up until you can't lift it up anymore. Just pick it up. They call it greasing the groove. It's the newest idea. Exercise definitely is something we suggest people do. The other thing we suggest is that they go out and begin socializing. I don't care if you volunteer or you join a group that does something, you want to paint houses or whatever.
But socialize being PC, meaning productive communication.
Right. You have to, and I would say maintain open communication with families in people in your family or people in your neighborhood or people you work with. You know, enjoy yourself. Begin to allow yourself to enjoy other people. Don't allow yourself to be lonely. I think loneliness is one of the worst things you could do if you are depressed or anxious. Even if you feel like you have to push yourself, remember, things aren't easy to do. If they were easy to do, everybody would do it. We would never have anxiety and depression.
I have to push myself all the time. I never want to do anything. I always want to sleep in. I have to push myself all the time. It's just life. that's how I'm challenged to do the right thing. Otherwise, it'd be too easy.
Right. It's not easy. Of course it's not easy. But you know what? What's easy in life? If you want to learn to cook, is it easy at the first part? You have to learn how to first prepare the vegetables.
Right.
That's not easy. Right? Everything is, once you start, it's a little hard. After you do it, it's a little less difficult. And after you become good at it, wow, you say to yourself, look at this, and I thought it was so hard. And it's not. But you first have to open your
eyes.
And
then you're glad you did
it.
Yes.
Right.
And when we come back, I want to talk about misdiagnoses and why some people are afraid to get treatment because of that as well.
Sure. Okay.
Okay. So we have been talking with Dr. Farrell about overcoming depression. Please call in if you have been struggling with depression. 866-34-TRUTH. Again, that's 866-348-7884. We would love to hear from you. This is The Cure.
We will be right back with Amy Cabell and The Cure. Continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure.
We're back. Thanks for being with us. I'm Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. You can listen to The Cure every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern on your radio, on our app, The Cure, on social media. All shows are also available as a video podcast. Please check it out. Look for The Cure. We are live on Facebook. Message us. Look for God is The Cure. God can read our minds. We can sometimes hear him. Sometimes it's hard to breathe, just like Dr. Farrell said, but that's exactly why I always need God here with me. And when he speaks, I am free because his words are perfect for me. I love that song. We're joined by Patricia Farrell talking about depression. And doctor, I have to tell you, 1 hour is not enough. I have so many questions for you, and you're such a wonderful world of information. And right now, we have a caller.
Okay.
So, hi, Charles. Thank you for being with us.
Hey, Amy. How are you doing?
Good.
And God bless you.
Thank you so much.
I wanted to ask the doctor, what's the difference between depression and PTSD?
Well, PTSD primarily is an anxiety disorder. Now, it may include aspects of depression, but primarily it's in the anxiety disorders area and has very specific, as you probably know, very specific symptoms and is a very difficult disorder to help with. But there are new things that they are using now that look very promising. I don't know if you've read up on things like virtual reality. That is being
used. Oh, yeah, I have.
Right? Okay, good.
It's expensive. It's very expensive.
Have you? Oh, okay. So what has been your experience with that?
Well, I haven't tried it because I can't afford something like that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Are you a veteran?
No, I was.
Oh, okay. Because
physically,
I know that the VA.
Just so we're on the question, I was sexually abused for 5 years at a school, at a boy's school.
Doctor, could you tell us about complex PTSD?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Complex PTSD.
Yeah, that must have been, I can imagine how difficult that was and probably took quite a few years to try to come to terms with that, and I'm sure that you felt
well, actually, it lay dormant in my psyche, in my head, for the longest, What I know of is that it just gets worse over the years. My dreams have gotten bad and everything. And just like all the women that are coming out and saying that they've been abused and some people saying that that they're just now coming out, that's basically PTSD. I mean, it lays dormant in your psyche for a long time, and then it just comes out, and then...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
does PTSD go away, or can it go away, or like depression goes away?
You know, I think, unfortunately, my personal opinion is that PTSD is probably very much like cancer. It is not going to be cured, but you are going to learn to begin to help yourself to deal with the symptoms, and it will take your efforts, even after therapy, it will take your ongoing efforts to really try to deal with that, to understand that you were not responsible, you were a child, and someone did a terrible thing to you, took advantage of your innocence, and tried to, in a way, destroy that and keep you a prisoner. Because the whole idea, I'm sure, was this is a secret. You shouldn't tell anybody about this because this is between the two of us and you're very special to me and that's why this has happened. So,
yeah,
you know,
I agree with you.
You know, I've seen a couple of, it hasn't been my practice to deal with persons who were abused in that way. But I have seen a couple of people in psychiatric hospital settings who were pedophiles and who preyed on young boys and got themselves jobs. And, I mean, we've heard a lot lately, haven't we, about high school,
that's
colleges.
Yeah, that's exactly, you're describing exactly what happened to me.
Yeah, sure.
What happened to me.
Was it? Okay. And, I mean, you know, this, look at the other day, a man who is a retired New York City police lieutenant came out it probably in his, what, his middle 60s now or whatever, and admitted to the fact that he had been abused by a big organization in New York City that everybody thought was doing the most wonderful things for the boys and keeping them off the streets. Meanwhile, the place was full of pedophiles. I mean, they just had their pick of these kids who didn't know what was going on, and when they found out, were totally, I mean, blown away by it. So it's something that I believe is lifelong, and you have to keep telling yourself, look, I'm strong, I'll handle it. It happened, but you know what? It's not going to destroy me. I'm bigger than that. And I believe that probably, you know, you don't have to be in therapy for the rest of your life. But I've always said to people who've come to me, I've had people who were in 9/11 and suffered terribly as a result of being in the buildings when they were coming down and had PTSD and didn't know what was happening to them. They just thought, okay, fine, the buildings came down. They didn't realize what was going to happen to them. I say, look, you go in therapy, you get as much help as you can, you go on with your life, and if at any point in the future something comes up again, you go back to therapy and you get some help. It's like anything else. You know, you go for all kinds of regular things in your life that you have to go. You have to go for another checkup, another fix. Even if you had a car, you would have to take it in regularly for some kind of a little fix or whatever. Well, that probably, and that's not a bad thing, because all of us need help for the rest of our lives. And if there's somebody can help us, that's wonderful. I mean, it's not the way it used to be. It used to be terrible, especially for males, for boys.
Yes, and imagine if we learn to help ourselves, which took me a very long time, by the way. But Charles, if you'll stay on the phone, I'll send you my book. I was sexually abused since I was 7 until about 16. So I understand where you're coming from.
Amy, can I ask one more question?
Sure.
You know what really upsets me is that the difference between the PTSD is that sometimes you were mentioning that gentleman in his 60s that came out and said this is what happened to him. Okay? A lot of people say, oh, my gosh. You know what my mother did? She said, oh, I don't believe them. I said, Mother, you've been a victim of abuse like I have, systematically. I mean, it was 5 years that happened to me. And even some of my people in my family, they don't believe me because I can't. But see, it was the largest malpractice lawsuit in Georgia's history, $35 million. Okay, and there was 125 litigants. So how can you not believe that? You look at my life, and then you look at the females and all the people lately in the last 2 years that have come out against physical abuse, sexual abuse, every kind of abuse you can imagine sexually. All right, and say, okay, this is what happened to me. And then you have people say, oh, I don't believe them. You know,
my mother didn't believe me either. People don't want to believe the truth when it's ugly.
That's a big part of the problem. The fact that people are willing to keep themselves ignorant. And the abusers, I always say, pedophiles are the greatest salespeople going. They have convinced everyone that they are absolutely, you know, the best people going. Yeah. And they have the best motives. And they only want to help kids, usually.
Including
and
the victim.
These, you know, I used to do speeches for Planned Parenthood at one time. They had a program to help kids learn to say no. Good touch, bad touch. And I can tell you that I knew when I was looking at that audience, usually of parents, I knew that sitting in that audience were pedophiles, waiting to hear what I was going to say so that they could come up with ways to get around that. And it is, you have to believe the children. Children have no reason to lie.
Not about that. To
make up these stories. Look what happened with the McMartin people out there on the West Coast.
I find it hard to believe that even an adult would lie about something like that. Nobody wants to be in that predicament. But we're almost finished with today's show, guys. We only have a few minutes left. Thank you so much, Charles, for calling in.
God bless you.
And God bless you. And thank you for your courage. And thank you, Dr. Farrell, for being with us. You're very informative. I'd love to have you again. There's so many questions I didn't get to ask. But there's always more information about Dr. Farrell. Just go to godisthecure.com and look under guests. Guys, let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you that you never change, even when everything around me is changing and unpredictable. Thank you that you are stable, even when I feel so very unstable. Please sustain me, protect me, and enable me to stand. Please lead me to do the right, source of help. Heavenly Father, please strengthen our hearts and remind us to encourage one another when the troubles of life start to overwhelm us. Please guard our hearts from depression. Give us the strength up to rise each day and fight against the struggles which seek to weigh us down. Amen. This is Amy Cabo. You have been listening to The Cure. Check our podcast by going to amycabo.podbean.com or on your podcast app, look for The Cure. Thank you for being with us. Until next week, much love.
Listening to The Cure with Amy Cabo. For more information or to get Amy's book, Love is the Answer, God is the Cure, or to listen to the podcasts of previous shows, visit godisthecure.com.